This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
David Hunt has been part of the Australian music industry for over 25 years. He has worked for numerous major and independent record labels, promoting an array of local and international talent from Crowded House and David Bowie to the Pet Shop Boys and Whitney Houston, just to name a few.
He has been part of Joy for 3 years, managing the station's sponsorships. He also lectures for James Lee Academy in Music Industry Business Studies. David, thanks for joining us on Sound Museum.
My pleasure.
Now, how did your passion for the music industry begin?
Oh, well, I've always had it. I was one of those sort of kids that had to have a little radio with them everywhere they went, you know. So I'd sit in the back seat of the car and the family would be listening to maybe Talkback or whatever they were listening to, I don't know. But I had my own little radio in the back and I knew all the lyrics to all the songs. So it just came naturally to me. It really was. And so therefore, when I finished my working, in my school life and I went out into the workforce, I had a particular career path and I had to wait 12 months to get into a course that I wanted to do. And, you know, like being a gay person, I was going to do interior design. of course I was. And so I had to wait 12 months, as I said, and an opportunity came up to work in a local record store because the lady down the street knew the people that ran it. And I ended up working for them for 10 years. So I gave up the idea of interior design because I really had this passion for the music industry once I was in it. And that record store opened my mind to so many varieties of music where, you know, we're all a little bit narrow-minded in what we like. I had to know every style of music, from heavy rock to classical to jazz to a lot of instrumental stuff, and then to all the great pop that I loved anyway. So that was just great. And I've always had a hunger for music. So therefore, it came naturally to me. And I was always one of the few record stores around that actually jumped onto a song. When I heard it for the first time, I'd go, that's going to be a hit. I'm going to order lots of it. And, you know, and I'd play it all day during the lunch break when all the office workers and all that would come in. And we'd have a number one hit the following week and none of the other stores around town were selling it. So, you know, it's just been that natural progression for me.
And I guess working in a record store gave you a lot of background experience as to what consumers want, what kind of styles, what audiences listen to what kind of music.
Yep,
and that would have helped in your promotion.
Absolutely. And what I did for them is that I actually moved around. They kept on opening a retail. This is back in Adelaide, and they used to be called CC Records. They're no longer around. And I opened four or five of their different stores for them. So I moved to different suburbs to help set them up. And I'd only be there for 6 months, and then I'd come back to my main shop again. So it was really good. So I knew different areas and what sort of styles of music worked in different areas. So it gave me, again, a better appreciation of different styles.
So now that you've probably got a fairly big CD collection yourself.
Well, do you know what? It's really quite interesting. I just don't collect CDs for the sake of it. All the years I've worked for major record companies, and I literally was given everything that we released on a weekly basis for many, many years. And I would only keep some weeks or some months, I wouldn't take one CD. I only would take the stuff that I knew I'd play. And even to this day, I still actually get rid of stuff that I haven't played for a couple of years and give it to somebody else that I know likes that band, or, you know, let's sell it.
See, Petra and I would probably take the whole lot, wouldn't we?
Probably.
Well, most people do. And you go to their houses and they've got this whole room that you go into, record industry people, and they've got, you know, it's ridiculous. Ridiculous. They build cabinets and all that, and people go, ooh, and then I think, well, big deal.
You know, okay, you're starting to talk about me now, so next question.
After your work with record stores, you signed with EMI Records.
EMI Records, yes. I never thought I would actually be good enough to work for a record company, and it was a sales rep for them, so going around to all the record stores selling the new releases in and setting up little promotions and doing displays in their stores and stuff. And they asked me, I was actually asked if I would do it, and so I did. And I loved it. And again, I was actually taking my passion of music to the record stores and getting them excited about it. And a lot of the stores are going, nah, I don't know that song. I don't want to put that on. You know, like we don't want that one. I say, put it in, play it. You know, like play it this time of the day and you'll sell it. And they did. And they had trusted me and they had faith in me. And after a short time, I was moved over into the promotions area, which was my big love, because that was looking after all the radio stations, all the print media, and TV shows, which TV shows were very powerful then, because each city had their own, you know, like video hits per se. And it was great. And then all the artists that came to town, I would have to look after them and build up a relationship there. So it was good.
Did you find many of the artists really demanding?
Oh, all the time. But the thing is, you can't actually... I was very lucky that I had the skill for it. And it was something that I did develop over the years, and I'm still developing it. But you can't let them get on top of you. And you also... You pander to them, but you also don't do everything. You don't become a yes man for them.
Don't
and they respect, yeah, they respect you if you've actually got a mind of your own. And if in a lot of cases, if you go, no, well, we're not going to do it that way. We're doing it my way.
Because I suppose a lot of these, you know, big international acts are surrounded by a lot of yes people.
Absolutely, absolutely. I can remember Taylor Dane when she came out here many years ago, when she had that huge hit here, Can't Get Enough of Your Love. And she came out with an Australian who was living overseas, who was a makeup and hair artist. And this makeup and hair artist was telling her, oh, no, you should do this, you should do that. You know, she hadn't lived here for years, and plus she had never worked in the, you know, the music industry. She was a hair and makeup person. So I went to the manager guy and said, either you get rid of that girl or you tell her to pull her head in, and we'll get on fine, because she's influenced Taylor Dane too much. And Taylor Dane came to me, you know, like a couple of hours later and said, you're absolutely right. She has been dominating the situation, hasn't she? And I went, yeah. So if you're doing your job and they see you're a professional in it, they'll leave it up to you, and they'll trust you. You've got to get their trust, because you've got to remember that every country they go to, or every city they're going on a promo tour, they've got somebody else that they've got to put up with, you know, like a new person. Where it became, you know, like one of my key things is, and my reputation got out there, that a lot of people actually arrived in town and said, oh, I've heard all about you, we're going to get on famously, which is great. You know, I really enjoyed it. And what happened was that I ended up leaving Adelaide with EMI, and I was asked to come over here to Melbourne, which was a huge coup for me. I'd always wanted to move, and my main job was looking after Hey Hey and Countdown. So, you know, like a lot of the big international acts that came into the country just for those two shows.
Because, of course, back then, they were the two big variety shows to perform on.
Like huge. And the impact that Countdown had, if your song was played on Countdown on that Sunday night, it was almost guaranteed of going into the top 40 the following week.
Do you think it's sad that in today's industry, the variety shows kind of died a bit?
Absolutely. It's really, really sad. And, you know, like Rove has somebody on every week, but that somebody has to have already had a hit.
Mm.
You know, they have to almost be top 10. So therefore, they're not introducing anything new to the situation. Video hits, I still think, has a place, and they're getting a little bit more interesting in the way they're going. And of course, Rage is always there. But it's that great variety show that you see with a music act on it, and maybe an interview with them, that makes it a little bit more interesting. So, and you know, like, and I've been so lucky with some of the people I've had to look after because of that. And then they also, a lot of them come out on that promo tour to begin with, like Pink has just done, and then they go away and come back on a concert tour.
Well, you were just saying before that you were responsible for help setting up Pet Shop Boys in Australia.
I did. I was very lucky. It was here in Melbourne. The music industry was very rock and roll back then. I understood rock and roll and got it, but it wasn't everything, the be-all and end-all to me. I had a pop sensibility. That's what I really loved, and I really followed that through a lot, where a lot of the record company people wouldn't see that. I could pick up on it, and I would sort of run with it. And again, my bosses at the record companies also trusted me, that if all of a sudden I went, wow, I think this is going to be a hit, they would stick with me. And Pet Shop Boys is a classic example. We tried three times before we got West End Girls to be a hit in Australia. Three times, you know, that. And it took about 6 months, those three times that we re-released it. And then all of a sudden it became a hit, and, you know, like the rest was history. They just became huge after that.
Now, David, after EMI, you you moved to Virgin Records.
Yeah, and that was when Virgin was still owned by Richard Branson. See, Virgin is now owned by EMI. He sold it for a huge amount of money. It's when he got the Rolling Stones on the label, Meat Loaf, Janet Jackson, and he did that on purpose, paid a lot of money so that he could sell it for a huge amount, which he then invested in his airline because he wanted to go global with the airline. And working for Virgin in those days, it was absolutely amazing because it was like working for an indie record label. And the label was so well respected around the world for the artists they had on it, you know, because it was especially a lot of the English stuff, you know, they were really, really fantastic. And that's a lot of my love is English music. So I worked for them and they were fantastic in the respect that when their artists would come into Australia, they really felt as if you were already part of their family because there wasn't a lot of people working for them here. Like, for instance, EMI, there would have been 300 or 400 people working at EMI and Virgin, there was 10.
Oh, so it's very different.
Yeah. And, you know, because we didn't distribute our own staff and whatever. So therefore, when an artist came into the country, I would actually travel with them. So I'd go to Sydney with them and do all the media there. Even though they had their own media person, it's just good that there's just one person that's always there that they can turn to and bitch about this and that and leave everyone else alone. So, you know, it was, and it's really good. I can remember Simple Minds, you know, Jim Kerr, who married to Chrissie Hynde there for many years. And you know, and he came in before the rest of the band and you know, like an amazing person with this great Scottish accent. Then by the time the band arrived, I'd already become friends with him. So therefore, I became friends with the whole band and we were backstage with them and, you know, like, I'd taken them to my favourite restaurant and the restaurateur was backstage with us having a great time. And that's the sort of relationships that it's great and they love it because it's all of a sudden they're on the road and they've got friends.
Sounds like the lifestyle every fan would dream of.
Absolutely. Well, do you know what? It is an amazing life, but you're on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
A lot of responsibility.
And a lot of hard work. I can remember I had Grace Jones in the country. This is when I was working for EMI. And she strictly had come through for Hey Hey and Countdown and had done a few other bits and pieces while she was here. Would arrive 4 hours late to every interview
you did.
When she got off the plane, there were 27 cases. We actually had to have a van to pick up all her extra luggage, and then we had to rent a room next to their room with all coat hangers in it and all that, and there was a maid just looking after, and she'd go, oh, I'll take this one, I'll wear that one, and this one, and, you know, we'll take to the studios. Really painful, but the minute all of a sudden she started to, you know, get on with me and she liked me, because the national guy at that stage had gone because he couldn't stand it, you know, like, and he was fighting with her all the time, and her and myself had drunk lots of champagne together and had lots of fun. And so therefore, you know, she had my trust. In the end, she wasn't late for one thing we did. So it was a game she played that she did with her. And remember Dolph Lundgren, the actor who was in one of the Rocky movies?
Yeah.
Well, that was her boyfriend at the time, and he was here with her. And they were actually, yeah, like at one stage, I was in the middle of her room with her, and she was throwing fruit at him, and I was ducking the oranges along with him because her aim was pretty bad. But, you know, like, and that's the thing is that, you know, like, you work really hard, and I was literally with her because she wanted to party so much, and she didn't fly out until a Sunday afternoon. I went home and I slept for 24 hours because I was so exhausted after 5 days of her.
How do you look after an artist where you don't like their music or such, and you've got to be really enthusiastic, but you don't actually really care for the artist?
Do you know what? It's a job, and if you're a professional with it, you can actually do it. And as a matter of fact, if you tell them the truth, then you say, I'm not really into your music, but, you know, like, or you don't even have to say anything like that. You know, you treat them as people, and people are all the same. I actually had to look after Nirvana, and, you know, because they came out here on the one tour, Kurt Cobain was off his face the whole time, and, you know, the rest of the band were just fantastic. And I actually said to the tour manager, like, Kurt Cobain was rushed back to the hotel just to flake out after the gig was amazing, and I said to the tour manager, oh, look, we're going out to this club afterwards if you're interested, you know, like, tell the other guys, and we did, and, you know, like, and I've got a great story I can tell you, but I won't tell you on air about what happened that night, and we just just had the best fun with them. And that's the sort of music that I'm not into. And they went to this club that they would never normally go to. And that's what they said. They said, we did things like Kim Wilde. I went to the movies with her. We went shopping with her. And then I said, oh, I'm going out to a nightclub. And she said, oh, I don't really go to nightclubs. And I said, that's all right. And she went, oh, bugger it, I want to come. And she had a ball. We got home at 5 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, she had to do all this TV the next day. And she had a rotten hangover. But that's just what you do. You run with it and you just have fun with them and just show them a good time and they appreciate it.
Now, Paula Abdul's Opposite Attract was a number one hit in Australia, but it did take some time to get to that place.
Absolutely. And we broke that, I thought, because radio weren't going to play it. And I thought the only way we can get around it is to get Hey Hey It's Saturday to play an exclusive piece of the video. Because the video was groundbreaking when
That's
she was dancing with the animated cat. And Hey Hey said, I went, oh, we don't know. She's an unknown artist here, but she's really big overseas. And they trusted me and they said, okay, we'll do it. And, you know, just as long as none of the other TV shows are playing it. And the people in Sydney were screaming, saying, oh, you know, like Video Hits and Rage want it and they'll be really pissed off with us. And I went, hey, get it on there, or we get it, half of it played on Hey Hey It's Saturday with Molly doing the big intro for it and all that. And they went, okay. We got it on the next day on the Sunday. Radio started playing it, and you know, like, and they said, no, we're not going to play it, because all of a sudden they saw it. Molly had done the big thing and the huge impact, and it was really lovely because I went to America about 2 or 3 months after it had been a huge hit here. We went to the Virgin offices in LA. And they rang while we were there. They didn't tell us this. They rang while we were there and said, the guys from Australia are here. And she went, I'll be there in 5 minutes. And she came around and saw us. And then that night, we went to New Jersey to see one. She was doing a big, there was about five acts on, and she was a headline act. And we were backstage with her, and it was fantastic fun and an amazing performance because she's a dancer. So, you know, the routines were absolutely incredible.
So you obviously left an impression on her.
Well, yeah, because we had gone out of our way and really, you know, like made it worthwhile. Look, there's this artist that we all know and none of us really like his music. It's Kenny G. It's elevator music. And, you know, he plays his clarinet and he's this fairly boring person. He came out here. We made a commitment, came out here. By the time he landed in Australia and he had a personal assistant that was a pain in the ass, but that's another story again. And we worked so hard on it, and it was on Arista, the same label as Whitney Houston. And again, we went to an international conference about 6 months later, and they actually used our case study on how we broke, you know, Kenny G in this territory to tell the rest of the world, saying, look, don't give up on stuff. It can happen for you, which is good.
What sort of kind of research do you have to do when working out the best ways to market a particular act?
There is no particular research you do. I teach now, and I teach kids, you know, like this whole philosophy of what the industry is about, and there is no particular formula that you can use. Yes, there are certain things that you follow through, but you have to look at each one individually. And you actually have to have a bit of a gut feeling on whether it is going to work, and an angle. You see, what you've got to do now in the media is there has to be an angle on how to break it. Remember the film The Commitments?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know
No.
Commitments?
It's too young.
Too young. Yeah. It was soul music was introduced to Australia for the first time. It was a Alan Parker film. He made some great movies over the years, and he made this film of some Irish kids that got together and formed a band where they sung soul music. I went along to a preview of the film like months before it was out, and I saw this little film and I went, wow, this is really good. I was told by my head office in Sydney, it was before I'd moved to Sydney, that don't worry about it, it's not a priority, it's not going to work. I got all our sales reps really onto it. I got all the retailers into it. I got Molly to come and see it. Everyone was buzzing about it here in Melbourne. And then we hit it, what we were doing to the rest of the country. It debuted at number one on the Victorian charts that following week. And then all of a sudden the rest of Australia went, oops, hold on, I think this could be good, because there was nibbles coming from, you know, the cinema, people seeing it in the cinema. And it's just that gut feeling. And it's being lost a lot, where people haven't got that whole gut feeling with music anymore, and it's a shame. I think it's going to come back, because, you know, like, there is the lack of it these days, where the commercial radio, it's all about, oh, what's big overseas, what's here, what's there, and it's that instinct that you've got to have and look for an angle to break through.
Now, obviously, TV, print media, radio have been, for the past few decades, the major institutions of promoting an artist.
Uh-huh.
But the internet has just brought on a whole brand new, you know, sphere of promoting an artist.
Yep. Yes, it has.
Websites like MySpace, YouTube, Facebook. Mm. I mean, record labels have jumped onto these websites and they're really using them.
Do you know what? They were actually quite slow. They should have been doing it earlier than they did. But they did do it eventually, and they did break a lot of artists. MySpace has actually broken a lot of artists over the years. So, yes, it is having a major impact. But I think that era is almost gone a bit now because it's a little bit too disjointed. And everyone's doing it. It's the same old, same old. So, you know, like, it's not that exciting thing anymore.
So what do you think of, like, you've worked for the traditional record companies, your EMIs, your BMGs. What do you think of the new sort of wave of record companies like Live Nation, which have now signed Madonna, and they're looking after Madonna for everything, the record, the tour, the merchandise. Yep. They're going so much more than just the record label.
Well, they have to do that. The first major one that happened with was Robbie Williams. About 5 years ago, EMI signed him for $350 million. And it wasn't just for his recordings, which, you know, he's huge around the world, apart from North America, South America, he's huge. But it was all part of his merchandise. He's touring as well. So he started it, and now Madonna, her contract was up. I don't think Warner would have actually wanted to take on her catalogue anymore. You know, like, they're not selling the way it used to. So I can understand why they just let it go anyway, because they retain her music anyway from the past music. And it's the way it's going to go all the time now, is that this is the one way a lot of record companies are actually making their money, is through the websites, through the download sales, through the merchandise, which merchandise everyone loves, buying the T-shirts and whatever else you can get your hands on. So, yes, it's the way things are going, and it's actually the saviour of a lot of the record labels.
Something we've been discussing on Sound Museum over the past few weeks is the whole legal download versus the physical CD, because physical sales have dropped a lot in the past few years all over the world, but legal downloads through iTunes, Beatport, that kind of thing, has been on the increase.
Yep.
Do you prefer the legal download or the physical format when you make your buying choices?
Look, I'm still a little bit old-fashioned in that respect, because I love going to a CD store.
Yeah, I walk in there and my mouth drooling, yeah, because I just love it so much.
Oh, I know.
And holding that CD in my hand, and the little booklet that you get with it. Look, nothing beats that. You know, like, that's my feeling of it.
I so agree.
Yeah. And look, an iPod's great, and that's why the downloads, the legal downloads are so big, because iPod, everyone's buying all their music. And do you know what? It's fantastic, because so many people are being introduced to more and more music. I have a friend who's mad. You know, she buys so much download, but she also can't wait to get into a CD store to actually buy her music. And she'll often test it and buy one or two tracks online, and then if she likes it, then she'll go out and buy the CD, or buy the CD from overseas if you can't buy it locally.
What issues do you think are facing the industry now that are most important in the current times?
Look, I think the biggest challenge is already here, you know, like, and it has been for the last 5 years. So therefore, everything that's happening now is that, yes, less and less. You see, the biggest other problem is that people like JB is that they're actually going to make their CD area smaller, which is so sad, because they don't make enough money on the CDs, because the manufacturing, the all the copyright, the artist money, and all those areas, and, you know, like, where they do the publicity and promotion on it as well. It's all costing money, so therefore these retailers can't make as much as they can on you know, like, video games.
And of course, there's the slow death of the CD single, which they no longer stock anymore in JB stores.
No. Well, and a lot of the times they're not even released to radio, as a hard CD anymore.
Now, obviously, you've had a lot of fun in the music industry over the years.
Mm.
Is the music industry still a fun place?
Look, absolutely. It's a lot more boring these days than it used to be, because it was one of the most exciting places you could work. The film industry is very corporate and very very, very boring on that level. So therefore, it's very different. As in, you know, like I always look at them as similar media. It has lost a lot of its passion because the industry can't afford to have any of the big players anymore. So they've all moved in. They've already had to move to other areas, or they've gone out and done their own start up their own label or their own publishing company. See, that's where a lot of the record companies as well are making money, is they actually get the artists on publishing as well.
You're on the Sound Museum on Joy 94.9. We're talking to David Hunt about his career in the music industry. David, before we let you go, have you got sort of a final story about an artist story of an experience or hot gossip or something?
So much gossip. You know, like
tell us about Whitney.
Whitney was an interesting one. I'm not a big Whitney fan.
you did go to her album listening session last week.
Of course
week.
I did. You know, like I set that up with the record company and I went along because, you know, like I still support music that I don't really like. So I was working at BMG. I was National Promotions in Sydney, and we went and saw the movie, and we knew that it was going to be big. And this is
the Bodyguard that we're talking about.
Oh, sorry, the Bodyguard album and the film. And it had sold up until I'd left the company something like 750,000, so it'd be well over a million copies
in Australia
in this country alone. And so therefore, you know, like seeing that album just sell week after week after week after week, it went on for about 8 or 9 months. So that was the other really interesting thing, is that back then, you know, like albums sell for month after month. And and then I actually had to go to America again on one of these conferences, and she was in the room, and she came in such a prima donna, and it was all she went around and kissed all of us. There was about 10 people in the room, and then she actually singled a few of us out, which was really quite interesting. And I actually sat next to her at dinner, which was really good, and we had a great fun. We drank lots of champagne together and had fantastic fun.
That's incredible.
But then I'll just quickly just say, Kylie, at that same conference, it was a BMG conference, BMG never had her in this country because she's always been on the Mushroom label. So she came into there was hundreds of people, take that, were at the same conference I'd played water polo with that day. And Kylie came in, and all of a sudden her manager was, Terry Blaney was there, and she came over to us because he was talking to us, a couple of Australians, and she said, I know you from somewhere. And I said, well, we used to hang out together, you know, like mutual friends. And she went, oh yeah, we used to go clubbing together and all that in a big group. And she actually said to me, I don't know any of these people here. I know you don't work on our product because BMG doesn't have my stuff in Australia, but I don't know any of these people. They're all standing back wanting to meet me. Will you take me around as a fellow Australian and introduce me to everyone? So I had to take her around in front of 200 people and introduce her to everyone.
Lucky boy.
And she was delightful, and we just had lots of fun all night.
That's terrific. Well, David, it sounds like you've got a wealth of experiences over the past 25 years from working in the Australian music industry.
And a heap of parties.
But, and I still hang out. Look, the ARIA Hall of Fame last week, I went along with Taryn and we did the red carpet, and it was great because all these people were coming up the red carpet that I knew, and I was making sure that we were getting them, and they were all saying, you know, like, yeah, we'll do an interview for you, you know, like, and of course we will, we know you. So it's still all fun.
Well, thank you for joining us on the Sound Museum. We appreciate you sharing all your experiences, and we could probably go on all night, couldn't we, if we had the chance. But yeah, it just sounds like you've had an amazing run, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.